What's up, everyone? Welcome to this edition of Hiring University. I'm John Beck, your host. Today, we are lucky and fortunate to welcome Jam Portis, Director of Alternative Workforce at NetApp. Jam has been in the staffing industry and done some things. 6 years at NetApp, again, currently running the alternative workforce, which I'm guessing is a lot of contingent labor. And before that, Managing Director at Modus. And before that, held roles at Amazon, Pontoon at Google, Randstad at Cisco, Levi's and others. I've heard of some of those companies. Jam, welcome to the show and glad to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
You've obviously been some places and seen some things, and I want to talk a little bit about your past. But for those listeners who've been living under a rock for the last 15 or 20 years, tell us a little bit about NetApp and the program that you're running.
So NetApp is, it's a company, tech company that's been around for quite some time. We're well into almost 30 years solid and are transitioning over to the cloud, and our primary business focus is data storage and solutions. I roll up to HR, talent acquisition, and I oversee NetApp's global alternative workforce program. Alternative workforce, or AWF, is our term for contingent workers. We've got a little over 6,000 AWFs in about 40 countries, and we partner with about 500 staffing suppliers and service providers.
It's hard to believe that it's been 30 years. That makes me feel old, because sold, used, done all sorts of things with NetApp along the way. That's amazing. It's hard to believe it's been that long. Tell us how you got into this wacky, crazy business that is staffing. How'd you find it? Very few of us woke up or graduated with degrees in staffing. How'd you find your way?
Yeah, I actually went to school for international business and Japanese. I lived in Japan for a year, learned how to speak, read, and write Japanese. I was hoping to be a Japanese gaming translator, but that didn't pan out.
There's still time.
I don't know now, but I came home from my study abroad program, and my parents basically said, "We're going back to the Philippines to retire. You're on your own." So I had to find a job quickly. And I actually got a job working for Venturi Staffing on site at Levi Strauss. And I was responsible for recruiting and hiring temps for Levi's on site. And I'm happy to see that they're still in San Francisco. So I'm excited about that.
Any significant changes or things as you think about what it was like when you first started versus the way it is now? Any big eye-openers that you think, boy, better or worse?
You know, back in the day, it was just staff aug temps, but now we're at a point where there's so many different pathways of talent. You've got independent contractors, you have service providers, you've got agency workers, you've got early in career. I mean, back then it was just, okay, if you're not an employee, you're a temp.
Right. Two categories so versus all the different ways. Yeah, might be better or worse. We'll come back to that. There's obviously a ton of news of late with respect to the labor force and the job market, with as much news of layoffs. There's news of labor shortages and obviously low unemployment, which is held steady. How do you, you know, heading up a 40-country global effort for a $15 billion 30-year tech company, how do you navigate through what is arguably uncertain times and messaging for your managers? And maybe what's the profile of NetApp today as you look at it as it exists today and what we think is coming or not?
Yeah.
Big question.
We've been pretty fortunate not to have massive layoffs like the Twitter or the Meta and the Google of the world. We are in a hiring freeze. And I think what's the challenging position that we're in now is to actually come up with significant cost savings to avoid these layoffs. And, you know, it's been challenging working with our supply chain to get us those cost savings, but that's in the position that we're in today to avoid the layoffs. We're still going through that exercise. We've been negotiating with our strategic partners, and I'm hopeful that they will be able to provide us some cost savings so we can stay whole. And that's really the position that we're in. I'm just grateful that we're not doing any massive layoffs, because I think it's going to be really hard to get that talent back when the economy picks up.
Yep. And is it consistent globally, or are there various parts of the world where it's more stressful than others, or is it consistent?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's consistent. I mean, if for NetApp specifically, 80% of our alternative workers are in the US and in India. India is a low-cost geo for us, so the focus from a cost savings perspective really has been in the US.
And is it harder, or specific to the US, is it harder or easier to find talent today? And I know you're in a hiring freeze, but you know, versus 6 months ago. And you mentioned obviously a lot of layoffs and good talent that's hit the street, which, you know, good talent is always going to find a home. In some respects, I'll answer the question for ourselves first, because there's been some layoffs, there's more of that capable talent on the street. I think people are less apt to hop around to take an extra $5,000 or $10,000 and they're looking for safe harbor. But I'm curious what you've seen, and has it gotten easier, harder? What's your perspective?
I think it's gotten easier to find top talent because of the layoffs. In fact, we are working on a talent strategy to take advantage of these layoffs. The challenge, though, is really getting the budget to get that rec open, right? Our hiring priorities for this fiscal year is cloud engineering, sales positions, and filling all of our openings in our new international HQ in Cork, Ireland. Mm-hmm. And so if there's a role that falls outside of that, it's difficult to get that role justified and pushed through. So while there's a lot of talent out there, we just don't have availability in-house.
And when you say hiring freeze, does that apply to full-time or contractors, all of the above?
That applies to all.
Yeah. Okay. So you're strict on it. Yeah. You mentioned too, you know, the difference between your time at Levi versus today. Seems like our industry comes up with new acronyms in terms of how to find people, and a lot of times it's semantics. But what, if any, new platforms or delivery models or technology excite you about where we are today and you think have legs for the future?
There's a lot of really cool intelligence tools out there, right? Like Brightfield, TDX, Magnet, who used to be Pro Unlimited, have their own intelligence tools. So I think those are really cool, but there's a cost to get that implemented, and we just don't have it. Yep. I think the VMSs of the world, like Fieldglass, Beeline, they have an opportunity to add more value to their customers by integrating, you know, intelligence, market data, kind of technology in their systems already. I know Fieldglass is doing some of that. We have yet to see it and implement it in our program, but the reality is there's a lot of really good technology out there, but it's very challenging to get the budget to get those implemented.
Do you think that it's the responsibility or even fair? And I'm going to pick on Magnet, and we love Magnet. We're in a bunch of Magnet programs, so this is more of a macro conversation, but we use them example because I've seen their data intelligence too, and it's awesome. There's fantastic information in there. Doesn't it make sense to have that be part of the service to benefit you and everybody? Because at the end of the day, the data that they're compiling is actually your data. It's, I mean, not all of it, but a lot of it comes from you as a client.
Yeah, no, I mean, to be fully transparent with you, that was an expectation until they came up with their proposal with their pricing structure. So yeah. That was a little bit of a shock. But yeah, to your point, it is our data. This should be part of, I mean, this is where the MSP value comes in, right? Is can they consult to the customer? We've got to get away. I mean, at least the MSPs need to get away from the tactical operational side of supporting a customer. They've got to evolve and elevate their role as a consultant. And you can't do that without the data. I hope it gets to a point where they include this as part of their MSP service, but you know, we're probably going to see the MSP fee go up. Mm-hmm. It's not something that they can offer as part of the overall service without having to increase or charge us something. Yeah. I mean, that's every MSP. It's not unique to Magnet.
Sure. And part and parcel to that, because I was first introduced to that team because we had some clients that were interested in some DEI metrics, and it's fantastic that this is on everyone's agenda and the conversation is happening and there's movement there. And I too had some sticker shock when I saw the price tag, but it also, I asked the question to myself and of them, and I'll ask it to you now. There's shared responsibility between the client, the MSP, and the supplier to solve the problems and to share the data, to even at the very least set a baseline, right? Because a lot of times people ask us, well, tell us about your diversity metrics. And we share it because we track it, and you know, California have to and that sort of thing. But we're a very small sample size. And I'll ask the question right back, like, what are you trying to solve to? What number are you trying to solve to? And very few people can answer that question specifically. And I don't think the industry can. Any thoughts or commentary or anecdotal scenarios where it's either working or not, or there's room for improvement?
So what's exciting is that there's a lot of talk around DIB. We refer to it as DIB, not DEI. I mean, it's pretty much the same, the same concept. There's a lot of areas of improvement in terms of actually reporting headcount. Mm-hmm. So we have 25% of our spend in program are actually from diverse suppliers. And our goal is to have 100% of our supply chain be a diverse supplier. I think the challenge is, how do we ensure that the spend is a reflection of the headcount?
Mm.
And that's the piece that's still being discussed. I have not seen an MSP or VMS provide that level of detail. So there's, you know, our MSP collects supplier EEO data from staffing partners that they oversee. But how do we get to a point where that is visible in the VMS and not just limited to what's in scope for our MSP? So this should also include our service providers, SOW workers, and independent contractors that we are tracking headcount for, but not necessarily managing timesheets, expenses, things like that. We need to have like a holistic approach in terms of how we gather DEIB data to really understand where we're missing the mark and where we can improve. It also drives how you recruit, right? Your overall recruiting strategy and how you engage staffing partners and who to engage.
And I guess I'll go back, because the one piece that you didn't mention, which I would always challenge people, is tell me what number you're trying to solve for. What's the metric that you're solving for? And it's going to vary by category. If you're trying to hire, pick whatever it is, gender, race within software developers, what's the number that you're trying to solve for and hire to? Because until you have that, you don't know whether you're doing well or not. It could be you're guessing at that point. And I think, again, those folks that have access to large scale data, I mean, LinkedIn could solve this problem pretty quickly if they wanted to. And I understand there's a whole host of reasons why they don't. Topic for another day. But do you have that level of granularity or goals within your program to say, in these categories, this is what our expectations are specific to the jobs you're filling?
Yeah, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
We'll get there eventually, but we're not there yet. We're still trying to figure it out on the, you know, internal side. And the idea is, you know, once we have a DIB strategy metrics internally, we can cascade that down to our external workforce.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's also going to depend on the role. You can't have the same DIB strategy across the board. It's going to depend on just your overall landscape.
Yeah, there's no question that one size doesn't fit all. And I appreciate the comment around diverse suppliers. Obviously, as a owner that's a middle-aged white bald guy, for those of you who can't see me, we don't fall into that category. But I do applaud those diverse owned companies that also champion it as well too. And that doesn't always happen too. And I think that's an important role they could play. Let's switch gears a little bit to another topic, which has bubbled up recently in our state and obviously across the country, which is the transparent pay laws that were just passed in California. Mm-hmm. How is NetApp planning to address that? I think there's pros and cons to what has happened. Would love to hear your perspective.
Yeah, so it started with the New York pay transparency law, and California's coming. Our approach is to actually just be transparent on the pay rate range for all positions in the US. So we've actually updated all of our requisitions to reflect the pay rate range for every role in the US.
Have you added more categories? I know that there are some clients who have said, well, if I'm looking for a software developer, there are grades or levels 1 through 15. Is that part of the strategy?
Yeah, we didn't have to add because our job taxonomy and our just overall rate cards is a reflection of of our salary guide on the full-time side. So we actually take our salary guide, convert it into hourly, apply the appropriate markup, and that ultimately drives our rate range, our bill rate range. And that has every level job title that we would hire for on the full-time side. So all we've done is we've taken the pay rate range within the rate cards that we already have in place. The idea is for our staffing partners to cascade that down and make that very transparent in their job postings when they're recruiting for talent on behalf of NetApp.
Yeah. And I think that's really where there's an opportunity for improvement is it comes back to the job description, because so often job descriptions are just cookie cutter. I've seen a study that says the average job description that's out there has been cut and paste over 15 times with not that level of granularity to tease out what the specific skill sets or experience levels are that warrant what the pay is. And that to me is progress, because I can't tell you how many times we get a job description and say, like, you know, need more intel, need more information, and everybody can benefit from that, especially for people that are looking for the job too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, on a personal note, Jam, every guest that comes on the show gets this question. I've invented or come across the Wayback Machine. If I put you into the Wayback Machine and put you back to the point where you first started your career in staffing, what one piece of advice would you tell yourself based on what you know today with all the things that you've done?
It's not so much an advice, but it's really a pat in the back in that I picked the right role to be in. Never would I thought that a contingent workforce program manager would have this much visibility with an enterprise company. And it's been really exciting times. I think that just the contingent workforce space is really evolving. I mean, if I look at NetApp, it's such a huge part of our total workforce. And being in the forefront of, you know, project initiatives, driving, you know, streamlined processes and things like that that affect our AWFs has just been, it has elevated me as a professional, and it certainly got me to the level where I am today. And I appreciate the visibility and the challenge of having to think outside the box to really help NetApp win.
Yeah.
So that's been
really
exciting.
It's all about the people at the end of the day, right? If it is, especially in technology, and you could argue everyone now with the whole digital transformation effort and having access to that talent. And there are still so many companies that don't place talent in that strategic category, which is just mind-boggling that hasn't resonated. Anything in your career that you would have done differently along the way, if you had other opportunities that you passed, or the what if or regrets?
You know, no regrets specifically. I think I've certainly I do have one regret. You know, you get to a point where you're so passionate about what you do and you put in the time, effort, sweat and tears, burn yourself out only for a company to lay you off. I've experienced that a couple of times in my career, and it helped me kind of reflect and just remind myself that work-life balance and setting boundaries is so important. And I try to put that in practice on a regular basis.
Yeah. Easier as you get a little wiser.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. An important lesson. Great. Well, thank you for leaving with us, and thank you for joining us on the show. We appreciate it. Promise me you'll come back in a year or so, and we'll see where things have shaken out as we get to the other side of whatever this is. And for our viewers, as always, keep safe, keep grinding, keep the faith, and we will see you next time on Hiring University. Thanks, Jam.
Thanks, John.